Welcome to Periodical Radio, the program about magazines and journals. I'm your host, Steve Black, librarian at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, and author of the book Serials in Libraries, Issues and Practices. This installment of Periodical Radio is about Mathematical Intelligencer, a quarterly publication about mathematics, mathematicians, and the history and culture of mathematics. This periodical straddles the definition of a journal and a magazine. The glossy cover and 11x8.25-inch format give it the physical look of a magazine, and most of the content requires little background in mathematics to read and understand. But like a scholarly journal, most articles cite references, and some include mathematical formulas. I think any reasonably educated person could gain from reading the Mathematical Intelligencer, but some of the articles do require a math background to make much sense of them. And like a scholarly journal, book reviews are an important component. The Mathematical Intelligencer has been published since 1978 by Springer, a major publisher of scientific books and journals based in Germany. Since its beginning, the journal's mission has been to foster communication among mathematicians and others interested in mathematics. Interdisciplinary treatments of mathematical topics are encouraged, as are articles about mathematical communities. The editors welcome humor, puzzles, poetry, fiction, and art. I won't describe the articles and features in the current issues because that can be done so much better by my guest today, Dr. Marjorie Seneschal. Dr. Seneschal shares with Dr. Chandler Davis the job of co-editor-in-chief of the Mathematical Intelligencer. Dr. Seneschal is Lewis Wolf Kahn Professor in Mathematics and History of Science and Technology at Smith College. Dr. Seneschal, thank you very much for taking time in your busy schedule for our interview. I very briefly described the Mathematical Intelligencer in our opening, but could you summarize for our listener what the journal is about?
Well, we think of it as a journal of mathematical culture. And usually when I say that to someone, they just they're stunned at the thought that there is such a thing as mathematical culture, and they can't imagine what that is. But there is, and it is really a very deep culture and very rich culture. There's mathematical history. There are mathematical communities around the world. There are viewpoints about the nature of mathematics, its meaning, its relation to the arts, its relation to physics, for example, to all kinds of other intellectual endeavors. And we also feature lots and lots of book reviews and puzzles, entertainments, and humor. And we include mathematics-related art and poetry and fiction, too. So it's quite diverse, and we think of all that as constituting the mathematical culture.
I see. I wanted to have you talk briefly about each of the departments in the journal. I'll name each one individually and let you describe them.
Okay.
Mathematical entertainments.
The entertainment, that is a new name for what we used to call puzzles, where people would send in problems that were required a lot of ingenuity, but not the kinds of problems that people worked on for 300 years, but more the kind that anyone with a minimum background could get involved in and probably solve, and yet whose solutions weren't known. But we realized that that is too narrow, and so that we've broadened that to include articles that are just interesting, even though they aren't necessarily posing problems. For example, we had one recently on phyllotaxis and its the relation of the seeds of the sunflower to the Fibonacci series and so forth, which we showed was not in fact the case, that it's not always related to that. So that's a fairly broad thing. We have in this current issue, we have the entertainments is on the Pseudico's French ancestors, the early forms of this that are not well known to people.
Okay.
And Pseudico being, you know, this very, very popular mathematical game, but it really came from France, and we have an article on the early French versions of this.
Yes, that was an interesting article. My parents are very into Pseudico, and I'm sure they'll be interested in that article when I show it to them.
Do you have a copy of the current issue?
Yes, we do. We've been, my library, College of St. Rose, Neil Hellman Library, has been a subscriber of Mathematical Intelligencer since the beginning, since Volume 1.
Oh, that's great. Well, that, you know, we're just about to celebrate our 30th anniversary. It's a journal that's continued now for 30 years.
Under the same title and with a lot of continuity.
Same title. And we're just, we're now producing, coming out with volume 29, and we're working on volume 30.
Well, that leads to the next department of Years Ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Years Ago department is a rather eclectic department of historical things. They range in tremendously as to what the topic is and when it took place. But the main thing that holds these together is that they are about mathematical history. So, for example, in looking at the not the current issue, but the one before, the history is an article written by Professor Vassar on airborne weapons accuracy and how mathematicians worked in the Second World War in an applied mathematics panel to improve the accuracy of airborne weapons. This is not the kind of thing we usually run, but it was a very interesting sidelight on the war work of various mathematicians who were well known for other things and not for this.
I see. Next would be Mathematically Bent.
Mathematically Bent is a humor column, and that is written by Colin Adams, who is a professor of mathematics at Williams College. And Colin is one of the funniest people around. And he writes this himself. Many of the columns have contributions from other people. We have a column editor who then accepts submissions and reviews them and decides which ones to accept and so on. Sometimes writes them himself or herself, but otherwise also accepts submissions. But Colin writes these all himself, and they're just wonderful.
Is it humor a non-mathematician would get?
I think so. Yeah, the thing I love about Colin's column is that they're enjoyable on many levels. If you are a mathematician, you can get word plays and so forth that might escape someone who isn't. But if you're not a mathematician, you can still have a wonderful time with these. For example, his which one is it? I'm looking now to see if this is the current issue. More from the mathematical ethicist, and he poses pseudo-ethical problems that mathematicians run into, and they're hilariously funny. And anyone could appreciate those.
The next is Mathematical Communities.
This is a column that features mathematical communities around the world, past and present. It's often written by people who live in those communities. We've had essays, articles from, for example, an Albanian mathematician who was an emigre but went back after the end of communism to see the state of mathematics in Albania. We've had articles, many articles on Europe, of course, throughout the ages. We've had articles on African mathematics. We've had articles on Philippines. It's a very, very broad and wide-ranging thing. One of the ones that's coming up very soon is going to be an article about the relation between religion and mathematics in the 19th century, early 20th century Russia.
I see. So mathematical communities are more than formal organizations, formal associations of mathematicians?
That's right. They can. We define a community to be any number of mathematicians greater than one. Although I did write an article about one person once for that, because this was a person who was a very unusual and offbeat mathematician who was very strongly supported by the more conventional mathematicians. And so I felt that that reflected on the type of community that we feel we have as mathematicians. But these communities usually are not organized in any particular way, or sometimes they are. I mean, it really varies a lot.
The next would be the Mathematical Tourist.
Mathematical Tourist is a fun column, I think. These are articles about either places that you can visit that famous mathematicians lived, or monuments to them, or particular buildings of interesting mathematically related architecture, or observatories, or sometimes they're about libraries that have particularly rich collections of historical mathematical works. But again, very, very varied.
Then the next would be the reviews section.
And the reviews section is book reviews. And the book review section, I think, is growing very rapidly. It's always been large, but it's growing very rapidly because the number of books about mathematics and mathematicians, and books of fiction, books of nonfiction, straight textbooks, monographs, all these, the numbers are growing very, very fast. and we try to keep up with them and keep abreast of them so that our readers can be aware of which books they should be looking for.
Are there ever reviews of films or other media?
Yes, certainly there are. And we've just reviewed an opera. We've reviewed with opera in Germany. There was a reviewed play in France. Have reviewed other things like that.
The last department was a bit of a surprise to me, Stamp Corner.
The Stamp Corner. This one, you know, to my great surprise, goes back to the very beginning of the Intelligencer. I recently was able to get a copy of the very first issue, which was really Volume 0 before Volume 1. And this was before it actually became a journal. At that time, it was more of a sort of a, what do you say, a broadside of something printed by Springer Verlag editors just to alert people to various issues and books and so forth. And even then, there was not a regular stamp column, but there were stamps featured. And the stamp person who does this, I should say that all of these columns, you know, really reflect the personalities and the interests of their column editors. And in some cases, the column is designed around that editor. In other words, without that person, we probably wouldn't have that column. For others, it's someone that we try to keep filled all the time. You know, the editors rotate. But in the case of stamps, this is Robin Wilson in England, and I think he's done it maybe not for 30 years, but for a very long time. And he's put out a book. Several of the columns have been collected into books, and one of his is called Stamping Through Mathematics. And he has, I don't know where he finds these things, just all over the world, stamps that have mathematical content. And he groups them by theme. He's doing now running through the alphabet, so things that start with an N and an O and a P. You know, we publish those always on the back page of every issue.
So it's a one-page department about stamps.
Yes, it's a one-page department. It's always the same size, and he writes a little commentary. Once in a great while, someone else submits things to him, and we run those for that issue. But mostly it's Robin finding these things somehow, somewhere, and they're wonderfully diverse.
I'd like to change gears just a little bit now. The instructions for authors for the Mathematical Intelligencer call for submissions to be in LaTeX. Could you describe for our listeners what that is and why it's used?
Well, LaTeX is a software. It's a typesetting program that allows you to input code for the mathematical symbols very nicely. So it's not a particular use if you're writing just, for example, book reviews. You can use that or you can use Word. It doesn't make any difference because there are almost never any equations or mathematical symbols in book reviews, although in some cases, of course, there are. But it facilitates equations and symbols so easily and so beautifully that it's become the industry standard for all mathematical publishing, and I think physics, too, and many other sciences. And it's not a WYSIWYG. You don't see it on the screen, but it's easy to convert to a PDF file, and then you can see what it actually looks like. But the code is easy to learn, and most mathematicians have learned it because when you write mathematical papers, this is what you're expected to use. And the reason that we are asking for it now, and if you look back a few issues, you see we didn't, is because we're planning also to have an online presence and to use the capabilities of Springer Verlag, which is our publisher, for faster turnover and for better printing jobs, I guess I'd be the way to put it. Maybe that's not quite the right way to say it. It's just that smoother production, let's say. And so we want to move to that in that direction. And because almost all mathematicians do use this, it's not too much to ask of them, we think.
Marjorie, how did you become one of the editors-in-chief? How did that come to be?
Well, it came to be that Chandler Davis, who was the editor, asked me to do it. I was I have loved the Intelligencer all my career, and from time to time did book reviews or some articles for it. And then quite a few years ago, I guess maybe 10 years ago, Chandler asked me if I would be the editor of the entertainments column. And I said, no, I didn't want to do that because I'm not a puzzle person as much as I think they're fun. It's just I don't have that enthusiasm for math puzzles that such an editor of that column really has to have. But I said I would love to do something, and I thought up the idea of the communities column. And that seemed to fit very well because the Intelligencer had already had articles off and on that fit under that rubric anyway, and so we just made that a column, and I began to work on that. And I guess I had done that about 8 years, and then Chandler Davis, who had been the editor-in-chief for 13 years, said to me he thought it would be a good idea if we were co-editors. And I thought that sounded good, too, so I agreed to do it, and we've been working together now for several years.
What do you enjoy most about being co-editor?
Well, it's really, I love editing. And what I love editing about editing is partly it's fun to take a piece of writing and see how to help the author find ways to make it better. And I love working with the authors. And so I find it, in many ways, it's an natural extension of teaching. And I've been teaching for many, many years. And I find this very enjoyable. I don't see the differences. I don't see the people I'm working with. They're all over the world. And one thing I meant to point out before is that one of the things that's very special about the Mathematical Intelligencer is that the audience is international. And so are the contributors. And so when we say that it's mathematical culture, we mean the international, worldwide mathematical culture. And we work very hard to make sure that it doesn't just speak to, say, a North American audience, but that the articles are represent and are of interest to the international community. And so back to the editing, it's a great pleasure to work with people from all over the world and to discuss with them what it is they're trying to say and to help make these things stronger and better, and also to work with Chandler to shape an issue and to try to present a lively balance of things, and also, you know, looking toward the future of how to make this even a stronger and more widely read journal.
You mentioned the potential to go online. Is that part of the future plan?
Yes, it is. It's taking us a little time to do it. We've been planning this for quite a while, and I think it's going to be moving ahead now.
What are the greatest challenges of being an editor?
I think that always the greatest challenges are soliciting really lively and interesting and timely articles, and articles that will be read, articles and reviews. I'm including in that, you know, things like the history and everything else, not just the mathematical articles, which we also have, but make it lively, interesting, and timely, and of wide interest. And also, I think the other challenge, which is related to that, is to broaden the readership. When 30 years ago, the mathematical community was quite small, relatively speaking, and now it's enormous. I mean, things have changed so much with the advent of the computer and the blurring of distinctions between pure and applied mathematics and the growth of so many of mathematical biology and so many other areas of applications. And the mathematical community is a much broader and much more diverse. It's also more diverse, vastly more women now are in mathematics. And it's just a different picture. When I go to the mathematics meetings now, it's a completely different atmosphere than it was 30 years ago. It's really almost unrecognizable. And we want to be in touch with and keep in the interest of this much broader readership. And also, I really value the contributions and the opinions of friends of mine, for example, who are historians, philosophers, and others, about mathematics, their own reflections on their thoughts. And we want the Intelligencer to be of interest to this wider community also, and also to have them contribute to it. So those are the challenges that I see.
Very interesting. An editorial in the first official issue, Volume 1, Issue 1, of the Intelligencer states that the patron saint of the journal was Leonard Euler. Could you tell us who he was and why he's held as a model?
Well, it's great that you found that. That is really a lovely essay, and I'm hoping that we'll reproduce that essay actually in our 30th anniversary issue, because I think it's a wonderful one. But Leonard Euler, he was one of the greatest mathematicians of all time, I think, and most prolific. And Euler published he lived to be well into his 80s. He never stopped doing mathematics, even though he became blind the last 10, 20 years of his life. He's the most prolific mathematician of all time, and his collected works are still being published. They've been there, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 volumes already, and it's going to be far more. The project goes on, and there's a big celebration of his whatever anniversary it is this year in Basel, where he was from. But the thing that the reason the Intelligencer made him the patron saint was not just that he was so prolific and that he was so courageous to continue his mathematics even though blind. It was because he was not afraid to pose questions that he didn't know the answers to make guesses, to publish attempts at solutions, even if he didn't find them. In other words, he was provocative and challenging, and he was part of he stimulated dialogue. And this is what we want to do also. We don't want this to be the kind of journal where we say, okay, here we've solved this problem, theorem proof, that's it. We want to make people think. We want to make people discuss. We want to make people argue. And we'd rather publish a guess and a question and say, this is something we want, you know, we hope people will get involved in and start thinking about, rather than having everything be all tidied up and sewn. And that's why he's a patron saint, because of his free spirit.
I see. Dr. Seneschal, from the journal, your personal webpage, and your publications, it's very clear that you have a real passion for liberal education and interdisciplinary applications of mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you so keenly interested in the broad context within which mathematics is studied?
Well, I don't think mathematics can be really understood unless you understand the context. I mean, mathematics is a subject that has many, many roots and many, many branches, and to really understand the ideas of mathematics, you have to see them as they've evolved over time and as they play out in different fields. So I feel that it's a subject that's inherently interdisciplinary, even though we think of it, or unfortunately often teach it, as just this is math and it has nothing to do with anything else. I think it really comes from and applies to and belongs to a much wider culture. And then it's just my personal bent. I have never recognized boundaries between disciplines. It's just not the way I think. And they're just not there for me.
How much knowledge of mathematics do you think a person needs to be genuinely liberally educated?
That's a very good question. I don't know what you mean, though, by how much. I mean, I wouldn't want to say you should have calculus or you should have this or you should have that. Because I don't think that... For one thing, I don't think that there's any one prescribed route into knowing mathematics and no particular milestones that one should have to.
Well, let me give you some context. As most colleges are here at the College of St. Rose, we're having an ongoing discussion of the requirements for liberal education for all majors at the mm-hmm. college. And, of course, part of that discussion is the requirements of how much mathematics, how much laboratory science,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes.
Do you have a feeling about, for any college student, how much exposure to mathematics of any sort they should have?
Yes, and my views are controversial, so you shouldn't take me as any kind of patron saint on this. But I think there are two things. I think one is that the student should have enough mathematics to understand how to read the newspaper, to understand the role of quantitative thinking and reasoning, to be able to read graphs, to be able to understand numerical arguments, to be able to essentially make their way in the current world. And I don't think you can do that without some math background. That's number one. And then I think that it's really important that everyone understand, students in liberal arts college, in Smith that's included, understand that mathematics is one of the great creations of the human mind and one of really a deep and profound aspect of human culture, and should see it in that light, too.
Where does a periodical like the Intelligencer fit into the overall goals of liberal education, of what we've just talked about? Where does the journal fit in?
Well, I think it's something that should be around and that people should read. I mean, it's a little bit advanced for the undergraduates, as a whole. Although I think math majors could certainly read with profit almost all the articles. It's not something that should be, I would think, in every dorm necessarily, because it really is a little bit, maybe a little too specialized for that. But certainly it should be in math lounges. It should be in the science library, in the math libraries. It should be available, and students should be encouraged to read it. And I think it makes a lot of the things in the Intelligencer make wonderful starts for projects that students could be doing in connection with math classes or in connection with mathematics or science or liberal arts classes. I think we have a rich source of materials here that people could use.
Well, Dr. Seneschal, our time is actually almost up. Is there anything you'd like to add before we conclude?
No, except that I'm just so pleased that you chose the Intelligencer to focus on this time.
Well, you've been a very interesting guest. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this installment of Periodical Radio. I'm your host, Steve Black.